We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Come on, come on, yeah, come on.
Welcome back, everybody. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. It is Tobin and Leroy.
Hey, somebody said, I see Leroy ordered a supersized bag of Negative Nancy with a side of salty. You see?
Okay.
Somebody also said I should nominate Tua's hip for the damages done, my friend.
I don't like that nominee. I don't like that nominee at all. Somebody says the island isn't governed by anybody. It's 2020 as far as land goes. The damage is done, my friend.
Right.
Do you want to hear? We have more on the island. Do you want to hear some more details on the island?
Sure.
Okay, so this is Dana White with Brett Okamoto. And he is apparently letting Brett know not only is there going to be an island, but the island is going to be unknown to the fighters. They will get on the plane and not know where they are going. Here's the UFC president.
So this place where this fight's going to be on April 18th, I have locked up for 2 months. So I'm going to continue to pump fights out. I've also secured an island. I've got an island. The infrastructure is being built right now. We're going to do all of our international fights on this island. So when April 18th, when we do this fight on April 18th, international and local, you know, in the United States, we're going to start cranking. The UFC will be back up and running internationally and here in the States.
So April 18th, UFC 249. So literally April 25th, you could have an event.
We are. We're going back to back to back. We're just, we're getting back into our regular schedule. Mm-hmm. So we will have postponed three fights. We'll make all these fights up and we'll be right back on schedule. Starting April 18th.
And are those cards already together, or is that those cards are under construction?
Under construction, yeah. We're working on them now.
How about transport? How are you planning on getting these fighters to your secret location?
So what we're going to do is we're going to get the fighters somewhere, uh-huh, and we're going to bring them to this location. They won't know where they're headed to.
Okay. Like maybe they'll connect like geographically, like if some of them are closer together?
We're working on it right now. But there's going to be...
You know, this is Bruce Lee's Enter the Dragon.
Things like that. Pull off the island.
I love this so much, Leroy. I love it so much.
This is nonsense. How can you get excited about this?
Because they're gonna bring the fighters somewhere. They don't know where they're going. It's like Love is Blind, but for fighting.
So let me ask you a question. If you put Conor and Khabib on a plane,
yep,
is that plane going to make it to wherever they're going?
Well, you got it. I think you'd have to go two trips, or you have to put them at two separate ends of the plane.
Okay, what do you...
Typically, the way they do it is, like, you remember when Conor attacked the bus?
Right.
Okay. Well, he wasn't scheduled to be on that bus, but that bus, Khabib was on there with all the other fighters. It's a fighter bus. They just have a fighter plane. Different. It's samesies.
Man, I gotta tell you, your idea of competition and my idea of competition are two different things.
I mean, like, what? So you're telling me you wouldn't have gone and played a football game if they said, boys, we're getting on this bus right now.
With the other team? No.
Well, maybe they... What if it's two planes? What if it's two planes? Like a red corner plane and a blue corner plane.
They're flying their plane. We're flying our plane. The Super Bowl. Two planes.
Yep.
You're not. No. What is wrong with you?
What do you put on the passport? Is the passport just stamped Secret Island?
No. Here's what's funny. Right? get on the plane and they fly around for 2 hours and then they just end up somewhere just off the coast of Florida. Right? Right? It's like, hey, man, this is no secret. We were just here a couple of months ago.
I wonder,
you know, if it was, wait, how about this? If Bill Belichick were to say something like this, or Nick Saban, you would call BS in a heartbeat.
That they would do a football game at a secret island?
No, if they said we're practicing and who cares where we are, it doesn't matter. You what? You would call you would call nonsense in a heartbeat. Am I lying?
Oh look, I'm not trying to say this isn't nonsense. It's nonsense. But I again, this guy's so dug in, you gotta respect all the avenues that he's going. Secret Island, and not only is it Secret Island, he's not even telling the fighters where they're gonna. Is this Mortal Kombat?
No, it's Enter the Dragon. That's where they went, on a secret island.
Let's get to headlines. Oh my god. Whew. Let's get to headlines, Dan Day.
I'm dealing with that right now. Give me a second.
Oh, all right. No worries. No worries, man. Take your time. Well, we're going to put them on a plane, Leroy. They're not going to know where they're going. I'm not having anybody blow the secret. All right? Blindfold on when you come in. Blindfold on when you leave. Just like a cartel meeting.
Now, I will say that there have been a few away games where I had to ask where we were landing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because guess what? When you play Cincinnati, you land in Kentucky.
Oh, that's like me when we landed in Dallas for the for one of the fights. I was like, "Hey, is your clock off?"
Oh, jeez!
I was so confused. I landed in Dallas and my phone kept flipping. I was like, "And we landed and it said 11:59 a.m. and then it flipped to p.m. and I was so confused. I was like, "Hey, man." How come it didn't go to 12 a.m.? Is your clock 12 hours off like mine is?
Dude, I'm telling you.
I've never been that confused flying.
No, did the same thing when we came back from Vegas.
That is the one I came back from Vegas. Oh, I've never been. Yes. Remember, we had a stop in Dallas.
Right. I'm like, yo, what are you talking about?
I've never been. I'm more confused by Central Time than I am Pacific Time. When we go out to Vegas for Pacific Time, I'm rare to go. I don't get jet lag or anything like that. I'm fine. But when we stopped in Dallas and then when I went to Dallas for the Errol Spence fight, the hour difference between us and Florida messed me up so much.
Well, I grew up in Central Time, so no biggie.
Crazy. Anyway,
and what's crazy is, how about this? Michigan is farther west than Louisiana, but they're in two different time zones.
So Michigan's in Eastern time zone?
Yep.
Huh. How about that? All right. If we get the headlines thing running, just hit us with it, man. Whenever you
this is WAXYAM South Miami and WSFSFM HD2 Miramar, a radio.com sports station.
So Heat point guard Goran Dragic, he told the Miami Herald that he has not thought about his upcoming free agency. He said, quote, "Right now, if I'm honest, I'm not even thinking about free agency. I have so many different problems. My uncle is stuck here in the U.S. I'm trying to get him back to his home country. I'm on the phone 24/7 with the government. It's a crazy situation for me and my family. I just want to be done with that. Hopefully, when this virus is done, I can think about my future free agency and everything." Well, I hope so too, Goran. That's always my favorite. When Goran is going to reveal something, he goes, "Look, right now, if I'm honest..." Like I never think that he's not going to be honest. I always feel like when he talks in that sweet Slovenian accent, that he's always honest with me. I never need the double down, but he sometimes feels the need to let you know. "Look, if I'm honest, I'm not even thinking about it. I'm on phone trying to get uncle back to Slovenia." How come the Dragiches aren't treated like royalty from Slovenia, Leroy? All right, they won the damn Euros. Shouldn't Zoran be out of quarantine? Shouldn't Uncle Dragon be over back in Slovenia, lickety-split? Why is this such a big headache for Mr. Dragic?
It's a headache for everybody, dude.
Yeah, but like Slovenia is not. He's got to be like what? How many famous people are there from Slovenia? Like we got the first lady, and we got Goran Dragic and Luka Doncic. Like that's the list.
I mean, really? It has nothing to do with how. It has nothing to do with how famous you are.
It just, I feel
that's
like
the sign of the times.
I understand, but like to can we help Goran Dragic out a little bit? That's all I'm saying. You know,
how?
Let his uncle go home.
There's a lot of people in a little bit of heat right now.
Not Gogi. Gogi should get a pass. He won Euros. It's a big deal over there.
Winning fixes everything.
I think it should for Slovenia. If Goran Dragic and Luka Doncic need something done, I feel like it should be done.
All right.
That's just me. Anyway. Myers Leonard, shout out to the Heat big man. He raised $70,000 in his 24-hour gaming marathon. So great job by him yesterday. in total, because he also donated, so they raised in total $175,000, but from the stream they raised $70,000. They're going to feed over 1 million people in the month of April with the COVID-19 pandemic. So great job by Myers, who has his own solution to fix the NBA, Leroy. Do you want to hear what the Hammer's method would be?
Yeah, go ahead. Shoot.
Here's what he would say. He says, I would say that it would be fair to maybe have 5 games, both East and West, figure out the schedule, figure out how you shake out the 8th spot, then figure out who it is there. Then in the East, you have 5 games to get the players' legs back under them and everything. Then if it were up to me, you go right to the playoffs. So it sounds like what he's saying is you do 5 games each conference, you figure out the 8th seed, 5 games for the playoff teams just to get loose while those teams are figuring things out, and then the playoffs start. What do you think of that?
Isn't that the same thing I said?
You
have a tournament for the seeding in the top 4 or the top 5, and then you have a tournament for the seeding of the other three or 4 teams. And if you're too far out of it, your season's done. Them's the breaks.
So Discovery.
Maybe you take the top 10. So the top 5 go for seeding, and then the next 5 or 6 play in the tournament for 3 spots.
It's a solid look. I'll give you how about co-idea, Myers Leonard and Leroy Horde?
Yeah, I came up with it first, but that's fine.
Okay. All right. I'll let him know that you said that. That you stole his idea.
No, that's
What?
I did not steal his idea. We talked about this a month ago.
You kind of stole it. You're saying he stole your idea though.
I said he stole mine. You said you just now said I stole his.
Moving on, Discovery ID is set to release a Tiger King sequel series, which investigates the disappearance of Carol Baskin's husband, Don Lewis. Are you in, Leroy?
Of course I'm in. She has to go to jail.
Just like that?
Here, let me explain something to you. There's nothing that I enjoy more than when people stand on their soapbox and point at everybody else who's supposedly doing wrong in the same business that they're doing, and they're the only ones doing it the right way.
Right.
And then they get caught up in something too. When all she had to do was mind her P's and Q's and everybody go on their way.
She definitely didn't mind her P's and Q's because the will was changed to say disappearance. That's not minding your P's and Q's.
Right. It's almost like a plan.
Yep. But I will say, the one problem I got to worry about with this is did you ever see the documentary Making a Murderer on Netflix?
No.
You should watch it. I think if you're looking for something to binge, it's kind of like the original Netflix docuseries that really went viral. Mm-hmm. And the story is about this Stephen Avery. I won't give the whole plot of what went down, but the big premise of it is they make it seem like this Stephen Avery was set up in the murder. It makes him look very innocent, or looks very questionable that he should be in jail. And what they said afterwards in the aftermath was that they did too good a job and they left a lot of stuff out that really would seal his fate of guilt. So maybe in this case, they're doing the opposite with Carol Baskin. Maybe Netflix is being a little bit selective with the editing, if we will, and in getting her, making it look like she's a murderer. Now, I will say, in the aftermath, all the parties involved, they have said, like this Doc Antle, he said, listen, this is overhyped, overblown, but Carol Baskin did it. And other people involved have said other stuff is overblown, it was shown wrong, but Carol Baskin did it. So people are still on the side that she did it, but I do know that the power of Netflix, they can sway people's opinions in who killed somebody.
Sure, of course. Of course, but guess what? If everybody had lived their own little world, right? Then nobody was going after her. She started going after them.
Yep.
And so now everybody's going to take a closer look at her. It's fair game. Her and her 11 tigers.
Yeah, her bum ass tigers.
Right. Like, she's talking about the conditions of the tigers. Man, Joe Exotic had his tigers living in nice big cages with well-kept cages and whatever. Carol Baskin's had them living in house cages.
So he says, enter the octagon featuring Leroy Horde against Chuck Norris. This is where this fight would take place. This is where this fight would take place. 80-year-old Chuck Norris against former Pro Bowl running back Leroy Horde.
It would have to take, because I don't want to get arrested.
Somebody says, since the whole UFC thing sounds illegal, can we just add a bit of kickboxer where they wrap their hands and dip them in broken glass?
I know.
When we come back, so the NFL came out with the all-decade team, and a Dolphins great may have gotten snubbed. When we come back, we'll get into a little bit of that next. All right, welcome back, everybody. It is Tobin and Leroy. In about 20 minutes, we're going to talk to the voice of the UFC, John Anik. Obviously, there's a lot going on with the UFC, but our favorite story today is Dana White buying an island. Leroy thinks this is ridiculous.
The best story is the fact that you're buying this nonsense.
What nonsense is there to buy? You don't come out and say that you're going to buy an island unless you bought an island, Leroy. I'm sorry.
No.
That's just how it goes.
Here. And then he one-upped it. Right? Because you didn't hear that part where he said.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
They're working on it now. And nobody's leaked anything out.
Well, that's why he's keeping it secret, Leroy. If anybody were to know, they would leak it. And so he's trying to loose lips sink ships. So he's going out there.
The people that are working on the island know.
Well, maybe he's got an NDA. Maybe he's got backup island. He goes, listen, you back out on this or you squeal, I'm going to go to the next island. There's a lot of islands out there.
Really?
Huh. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So did you see, Leroy, they came out with the all-decade team yesterday on NFL.com.
Yep.
Tom Brady on the list, Aaron Donald on the list. But looking at some of the defensive ends, they came up with four defensive ends.
Give me the four names.
Here are the four picked, all right?
All right.
You have J.J. Watt.
Yep.
All right. Calais Campbell.
Yep.
Cameron Jordan.
Yep.
And Julius Peppers.
Yep.
Those were your picks. And then if you have a star, it donates a unanimous selection. So J.J. Watt was unanimous to be on the team.
Unanimous. Two-time MVP.
J.J. Watt, Aaron Donald, Von Miller were on defense. Joe Thomas, Marshall Yanda, guard, Adrian Peterson, and Tom Brady were unanimous on offense.
Okay, well, but, question.
Okay.
Is Cam Wake considered a linebacker or a DN?
I would say he's considered a D-end.
See, because... now, that being said, one of the things that hurts a lot of guys with the Dolphins as of recently, and another person I'll tell you is Zach Thomas. They're no winning. They're not winning. And it sucks because how good you are and what your impact was on the game shouldn't have to do with how well your team did. But if you look at all those guys, the one thing they have in common is winning. Except for Calais Campbell, and he's a monster.
Yeah, Calais Campbell made an AFC championship, which I guess technically Cam Wake did last year, although he was not on the Titans what he was on the Dolphins for sure.
Right. No. That doesn't. So go through the list.
Here's Bleacher Report did a Wake versus Peppers. And it's a games. You have Wake 146 games to Julius Peppers 160. QB hits Cam Wake 213 to Julius Peppers 143. Tackles for loss, Cam Wake had more, 97 to 94. Sacks, Cam Wake had 98 sacks to Julius Peppers 89. And forced fumbles, Julius Peppers had the edge 27-22.
Okay, so close. So then go to team success. You shouldn't be penalized for it, but you are. Because guess what? The people that vote for that are the people that watch football from afar. If you're not in that, you know, or don't play that team or not in that city, and therefore you see more of that person in big time games.
Peppers. Julius Peppers has played a long time too.
Right. Julius Peppers also, if I'm not mistaken, was he on that Chicago Bears team that went to the Super Bowl?
I don't think so. I think that he arrived.
He was with Carolina, though, right?
He would have been with the Carolina team that went to the Super Bowl, but that wasn't this decade. Like, if we're talking all decade, that shouldn't count towards him. We're talking about Julius Peppers, which, by the way, I mean, look, he's a pass rush guy, so like they play a little bit longer. But this is basically Julius Peppers from 2010 until now. That's from age 30 to 38 in his career,
right?
Where he wasn't. I mean, he wasn't as good a player as he was back with that. And in fact, I wonder if they even did it like that, because I'm looking right now and I'm totaling up his numbers from. Well, you know what? I guess they would have had to go 09 if they're going 09 to 19 if they're doing team of the decade, right?
Right.
It doesn't make sense though, cuz they're saying the team of the 2010s, because I'm looking at his numbers on Football Reference. So he doesn't get to 89 sacks unless you count the 2009 season. So that's interesting. I wonder if there's a goof up there with this stuff.
Unless did they count last year?
He didn't play last year. Okay. He didn't play. Right. So I guess are they counting that 10 years? They're just counting that 10-year span?
I don't know.
It's a weird one.
I mean, I would say if you were here, how about this? If you would go to a random football city, right? And say, who's Julius Peppers? And then go to that same city and say, who's Cam Wake? More people are going to know who Julius Peppers is.
I agree with that.
And so you have to understand that the people that are out of the coverage of where Julius Peppers is played is going to be more familiar with Julius Peppers than Cameron Wake. And a lot of times, that's how they get these votes.
Yeah, I mean, and they did say, like, it's not like he's getting completely ignored on the doorstep, because, first of all, you're talking about the four best players of the decade. Like, it's at a position.
Right.
They're describing two of the guys that are on their all-time snubs list. Like, they got Drew Brees number one, AJ Green number two, three is T Sizzle, Terrell Suggs, and then four is Andy Reid. He didn't make the coaches list. The coaches were Belichick and Pete Carroll, and then Cam Wake was the fifth, the biggest snub in their mind, according to NFL.com.
Him and T Sizzle play the same position.
Yep, and then DeMarcus Ware was right behind him. So, like, a lot of good pass rushers of this era.
Right. Like, I don't think it's – look, to be on the list, you know, so he would have been the sixth guy, right?
Yep.
I'm not – there's no shame in that. There's no harm. I mean, he did get some recognition, just not the recognition.
How many years has Aaron Donald played? Like, he's already, like, to be a unanimous selection, hasn't he played, has he played half the decade?
He was, or has he played longer than that? 2012?
2014.
14?
So he's played six seasons. Yeah, so he played six seasons, and they're, like, unanimous.
I mean, at that position, the only other person could be Ndamukong Suh, right?
Yeah, like, if you were going to put, no, Ndamukong Suh did make the team. They did put, it was Geno Atkins, Fletcher Cox, Aaron Donald, and Ndamukong Suh were the all decade defensive tackles.
And here's what sucks. You have more pass rushers to pick from than you do interior defensive linemen. So that's another thing that hurt Cam Wake.
Yeah, and to your point about is he a linebacker, is he a defensive end? Like, Football Reference does put Cam Wake down as a linebacker, like officially on his Football Reference.
Right, so he'd be in there with Von Miller.
Right, but in this list they consider him an edge.
Okay, so they just call it edge. They just call it edge rusher. They edge don't rusher. Call it,
yeah.
Right, so they don't call it like, linebacker or.
Well, because here are their linebackers, and you'll see that there's great pass rushers here too. Like, they have Chandler Jones, John Jones' brother, who's obviously a monster. Luke Kuechly. Fantastic. Khalil Mack, no argument. Von Miller, pretty damn awesome. Bobby Wagner, Patrick Willis, those are their linebackers. So right. Yeah, that's tough sledding, man. That's a tough position to make it.
Right, but that's I mean, right. And what sucks about that is that you have some of these guys who they just put them at linebacker, and they don't separate inside from outside.
I do think, though, he does have an argument over Peppers because, first of all, it feels like, what are they judging Peppers on? If they're doing the 2010s, Cam Wake blows his numbers out of the water. I get it. He's more famous. He's been doing it longer.
Right.
I'm not trying to take a crap on Julius Peppers' career. He's obviously amazing. But it feels like they kind of fudged the numbers for him a little bit. I want to know what the credentials were for him.
Think about this. If you go to any NFL city and ask them about Geno Atkins, right?
Yep.
And then ask them about Ndamukong Suh, right?
Yeah, more people
are going to know about Ndamukong Suh. Geno Atkins is a beast.
Geno Atkins is a beast, but Geno Atkins made it.
No, I know, but I'm just saying that's kind of how that went. You say Julius Peppers. Every time you turn on a game, or would turn on a national televised game, and Julius Peppers was playing in that game. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, when he got drafted, everybody was like, look at the size. Look at what this guy is coming after you. It was like a different animal. I was
they're not like that.
Huge. They're not like that with Cam Wake?
Right, no. No.
But Cam Wake's a freak, bro.
Look, we know that. We know that, but keep in mind where these votes are coming from. Like, you could pretty much go to any NFL city and say the name Julius Peppers. Can you do that with Cam Wake? And so once you go to 32 NFL cities and get voters from all 32 cities, right, you're going to have more people that vote for Julius Peppers just because the name is more familiar because of televised games, playoffs, whatever.
I understand that, but doesn't that kind of suck? Like, he's been in the game for almost twice as long. Cam Wake came from Canada, and look how fantastic he did.
Sure, absolutely. Like, I'm saying, from the standpoint of where he ended up, I'm not as upset. I'm probably more upset that he probably didn't get a fair shake simply because of where he played and the success that his team played and the national televised games that he played in and the big time moments that he would have had an opportunity to play in. Because if I switch the teams, right, then it's Cam Wake and Julius Peppers doesn't make it.
Do you think that Cam Wake, when he writes his Players Tribune goodbye article, that he'll thank Joe Philbin?
No. But I do think he'll thank. But I got one word for him.
What's that?
How pissed off would you be when he thanks Nick Saban?
I don't think he played under Nick Saban.
No?
No. He came. He was actually the rare good Parcells find. So I think he came in for, let me see, 2009, so second year under Sperano.
Oh, okay. So Nick Saban was already gone.
Nick Saban was gone.
All right.
Nick Saban was gone winning championships for Alabama. He came in at 27 years old, Leroy. Cam Wake came into the NFL. It's wild. Absolutely wild. So, yeah. So you're saying that he won't thank Joe Philbin. Will he thank the late Tony Sperano?
Yes.
All right. So you're saying Cam Wake classier than Tom Brady, who ignored Bill Belichick.
Oh, boy. I see what you did there. I see what you did there.
Would you thank Bill Belichick? Like, if you had some Players Tribune article, would you thank all your – would you do the I thank all my coaches, or would you thank Bo, and would you thank Denny Green, and would you thank Bill Belichick? Would you thank all the lot of them?
I would say yes, simply because, you know, the one thing that I got lucky with in my whole career is the way my dad – taught me how to play football, just in general, just how to play hard and run hard and, you know, don't always, you know, take matters into your own hands as far as running the football. I got that same lesson throughout my whole career. And so I got lucky in that the message was consistent throughout my whole career with how I played and the style that I played with. And that helped me. You know, at any point in time, if I would have went to a team that had different plans for me or a team that wanted me to play a different way, I may have struggled. I don't know that. But everybody that I played football for was like, look, go out and be you. And so that was continued when I went to Michigan. You know, it was a team that ran the ball. They wanted physical, tough runners. When I got to Cleveland, it was the same way. When I got to Minnesota, I was supposed to be the contrast to what Robert Smith was. And I got fortunate that I was able to play the same style of football throughout my whole career. And so, yeah, to some extent, you do have to give credit to all the coaches that were aware of how you played and wanted you to play that way.
When we come back, we will talk to UFC broadcaster, the voice of the UFC, John Anik. He's going to be kind enough to join us. We'll talk a little UFC.
Is he calling us from the island?
I will find out. We'll find out if he is from the island, if he's scouting a house in the island. We'll talk to John Anik coming up next. Welcome back, everybody. It is Tobin and Leroy here with you. Take up until 10 o'clock today. Our favorite story today, bar none, has been this UFC story. We've been following it, you know, throughout the whole drama of it, but I felt like it took a great turn yesterday when Dana White said that he secured an island, which Leroy doesn't buy. He's not buying it. He thinks it's nope. He thinks it's Fight Fire Fest. I love it. I was out. I was out. Now I'm back in. I was like, don't take away my Khabib versus Tony Ferguson, Leroy. And now it's like there's a fight island coming up in a couple weeks after this. I'm in. I'm back. You pulled me back in.
Come on, man. That sounds ridiculous.
Let's go out to the Toyota of Hollywood guest line. Shop over 1,500 Toyotas indoors in one of America's largest showrooms at Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan. The voice of the UFC, John Anik, he joins us there. John, thanks for the time. Really appreciate it.
My absolute pleasure. You guys are cracking me up. You know, if anybody can acquire an island and put a fight on it live, it's Dana White. So I wouldn't bet against the man.
What is, John, the move that you've seen either from Dana White or maybe even back with the Fertittas, the most boss, rich guy move that you've kind of seen in the background from your eyes, your years in the UFC, that maybe isn't buying an island, but you're just like, wow, that's different kind of money.
Well, I do remember one time he flew in a bunch of snow for Christmas to Vegas, and his kids were just living it up as they are, I'm sure, on a daily basis. But I think promotionally this week is really hard to top, right? While all of the other major sports are shutting down, and wherever you fall in terms of our decision collectively to proceed and do this event on April 18th, you know, I do think our executive brass and Dana deserve a lot of credit for, you know, being committed to this task, because it isn't just like the NBA for us where you can shut it down. We have 700 fighters that are independent contractors. They're all different television contracts internationally that, of course, the other leagues deal with. But, you know, for me as a commentator, it's like eventually I got to rip the Band-Aid off in the live event business and go. And whether it's May 9th or May 16th or April 18th, I can't predict when this thing is going to peak in certain parts of the country, and just going to take the necessary precautions, put my head down, and try to call a flight, you know.
How did you experience last week when we're finding out that the fight is falling apart again, that Khabib is in Russia and that he may not be able to get out, and Tony Ferguson, is he going to stay on, is he not going to stay on? Like, are you surprised that we are at this point where we actually do have a pay-per-view date set between him and Justin Gaethje, or did you fear that last week, even as determined as Dana was, that the whole thing was going to fall apart?
It's a good question. I kind of felt like the big motivation to preserve this April 18th date was because Ferguson versus Khabib might be the singular biggest fight competitively in UFC history. And as many of your listeners may know, they try to put it on five times. So I thought that backdrop was really what was pushing them to try with no shadow of a doubt that they could get April 18th done. But then when Khabib left the country, and I don't think he deserves to be criticized for that decision. The only area where you can criticize him is that he was in the same country as Ferguson. So those two should have been aligned, even though Khabib was maybe hearing that United Arab Emirates was more likely than the U.S. You know, I would have stayed in the same country as my opponent, you know, given how many times they've tried to put this fight together. But I think Gaethje is certainly a worthy adversary, and obviously he's a true number one contender. And it's going to be really interesting. I mean, I'm sitting here staring at a 13-fight card, you know, been doing voiceovers since Sunday night, and what's amazing to me logistically is they're going to get 26 athletes somehow, some way, in and out, you know, to a destination. There might be some weight cutting involved. What if a fighter gets hurt and potentially has to go to the hospital? There's so many different layers to this thing, and I can't even wrap my head around all of them, to be honest with you, man.
Well, John, that was my question with Khabib, is that, okay, if I don't think anybody foresaw this getting this far as COVID-19. That right. Countries were going to be shut down, people weren't going to be able to travel. But if anybody thought, and if Dana thought that it could be an issue, why wouldn't he just tell all the card, whoever was going to be on that card, hey, let's all stay here because I'm not sure this fight is going to happen here, and I want to make sure that I can get all the fighters where I need to get them.
Right. I think there are a lot of people dealing with family and circumstances, you know, that don't necessarily have to do with their professional realm. You know, my wife can barely look me in the eye right now because I accepted the flight on April 18th to go call the thing, you know. But I think for Khabib, a big part of the concern with Ramadan around the corner, you know, in a few days after the fight, was how was he going to get back home to his family? You know, was he going to be prevented from getting back into Russia? And he may be one of their foremost citizens, certainly one of their highest profile professional athletes, but you know, this is a dicey situation. And I think even for a lot of us UFC employees, in a perfect world, we'd like to see the promotion shut it down till June 1st. But I feel an obligation because my boss is moving forward. I feel the obligation to the fighters and going to try to, you know, safely get myself to wherever the hell this fight's going to be.
What do you think of the idea that they're doing this for an interim belt, John? I think Tony's obviously deserving of getting a championship fight. He has been down this road before where he's been interim champion, but you know, these are kind of weird circumstances. Do you like the fact that they're doing it for some piece of gold, even if it's not the actual title?
Right. I mean, thankfully, at least for Tony, you get one of the shiny new belts, because when he was the UFC interim lightweight champion, he had one of those old belts. So yeah, you had to put something on the line for Tony. Certainly I share the disappointment with a lot of fans that Tony Ferguson was the first lightweight in UFC history to put a double-digit winning streak on paper. He's got 12 consecutive wins, might be the greatest lightweight in UFC history, first ballot future Hall of Famer. And not only has he not been the undisputed lightweight champion, he's never even competed technically for the sport's ultimate prize, which is just insanity in 2020. You know, the guy hasn't lost since Cinco de Mayo in 2012, you know? So he's put together a special decade. You know, obviously he hasn't been as active due to injuries and circumstances recently, but I think with Tony fighting, I think there were a few things that were major factors. Obviously the Gaethje matchup had appeal to him in some way, shape, or form. Location was big, so presumably this is going to be close to Tony in California. And you got to put some piece of gold on the line, and certainly they've done that.
So can you take us, I guess, into the way you're experiencing this, John? Because as the thing is kind of seesawing back and forth, you hear they got a location. Are you kind of just standing by waiting to hear? I'm not expecting you to give us where the hell it is, but like, how are you experiencing this as the broadcaster? You got so much work to do getting ready for these fights. Now you're hearing there's a secret island up in the air. Like, just from your standpoint, getting ready for this professionally, what are you going through listening to all this? Because it just sounds bananas from our standpoint.
Well, you know, obviously we all have a lot of time on our hands, so this has occupied a lot of my mental space, so maybe that's a good thing in some respects. But no, the whole thing's crazy. You know, I'm trying to procure masks and gloves and trying to figure out if I can drive to where it's going to be. You know, I live in West Boca Raton, and certainly there were some rumors that potentially this thing could land here in Florida, and I knew better than to get too excited about that. But no, I'm sort of waiting on final word. I think it's about 90% right now, and you know, if it is California, I'm not going to be driving 42 hours. But again, this thing changes on the daily. So I'm just hoping to wake up healthy. I think one thing that maybe separates the UFC from other sports is the way we pre-voice a lot of elements, especially in our pay-per-views. So I laid down most of this show already. So if I all of a sudden was unable to get there, I'm putting a whole lot of pressure on the number two guy, you know, and his family for him to get there. So, there are a lot of layers to this. I know my wife thinks it's maybe at times just as simple as saying, Dana, you know, May 9th for me. But there are a lot of people that would be affected if I can't work this show. And that's why I'm kind of proceeding that way.
We're talking to John Anik. Before we get you out of here, man, we are down here in South Florida. I wanted to get your thoughts on one fight that's not in this weekend, but was kind of, they threw their hat in the ring to maybe get in the mix for UFC 249. Jorge Masvidal, Kamaru Usman. These guys, they feel like they've been circling each other forever. They had the whole Super Bowl thing that went down. When do you think, I know things are up in the air right now, but when do you think we're going to get ink to paper with these guys of agreeing to fight one another? Because I want to see that matchup. They've done a fantastic job of selling, fighting each other. Have you heard anything as far as progress between those two actually getting a date to fight one another?
I think there's a great chance that they co-headline International Fight Week in July alongside Conor McGregor. I think Masvidal Usman is destined to happen for the UFC's undisputed welterweight title. And I feel like, with respect to Ferguson Gaethje coming up here in 11 days, Masvidal Usman is too big a fight for an undisputed title to be played with this coronavirus backdrop and no crowd. I mean, certainly it stands to reason that they could be fighting without fans in July. You know, I'm not trying to get ahead of myself, but I guess one of the biggest issues I've had throughout this whole process is that the stakes in some of these fights are so extraordinarily high that to maybe have one corner man instead of four just doesn't seem right. To not have the usual arena atmosphere for a fight of that magnitude, it changes the whole complexion of things. So I am very confident, bullish, that Masvidal Usman will happen, you know, as long as it's safe to do so and ideally in front of a big crowd. But I just think it was going to be too soon. And I feel like for Game Bread, you know, not to speak for the guy, but, you know, he wants to have an optimal training camp for this guy. And I'm not sure he was really ready to put his best foot forward on April 18th.
We appreciate the time, John Anik. Thanks so much.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, guys. Pleasure.
That's John Anik. He is the voice of the UFC. He does a fantastic job and obviously has had a lot of stuff up in the air over the last couple of weeks.
I think he's just as terrified as everybody else. Like, you want to be the company guy. But at the same time, there's so much uncertainty about what's going on. Imagine calling all your employees and say, okay, here's the card. I want you to do the voiceover for the card. We're going to promote it. We're going to sell it. Hey, boss, Dana, where's this fight going to be? Don't worry about that right now. Just, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, but again, like, there's, you know, first of all, you know, this isn't even like, you think about how much these broadcasters and they go for, like, if you're a basketball broadcaster and you want to be like one of 30 teams, those jobs don't come open, man.
Right.
Like Eric Reed's been the voice of the Heat for 30 years. Like John Anik is the voice of the UFC. If you're a combat sports guy, you're the number one voice. Like Dana White says you're going to broadcast on a secret island. You're going to broadcast on a secret island. Like, I mean, you got the guy wants to go put food on his table. I get it.
No, agreed. You know, my only thing is they're going to have 26 fighters. You're going to have a ref. You're going to have scores. You're going to have people, doing the fight. John is going to do the fight with a couple of analysts, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
You got camera crew.
I think Dana White said Joe Rogan is going to do the fight. And then I imagine probably Daniel Cormier is going to go, I would guess. I don't know.
You have, I mean, just off the top of my head, that sounds like over 100 people.
Yep. That's a lot of people, man.
Right. And so is everybody going to, get the private jet? And then how are you going to do this island? How long before are they going to have to go there?
I don't know. I think it sounds like an in-out thing. It sounds like you're cutting weight on the plane, making weight on the plane, and then you get dropped to the island, you fight, and then you leave.
And then how are you going to penalize somebody if you fly to one of these islands or whatever, or how are you putting this fight together now if somebody can't cut weight like they need to cut weight because they don't have the facilities?
You know, that would be an interesting one if they could do something like to give the fighters a break and not – because cutting weight does deplete you a little bit. I mean, it depletes you a lot.
And your immune system is down.
Yeah, it would be kind of cool if the UFC could. I know it's probably tough for Tony versus Gaethje because they're fighting for a belt. But for the other ones, if they could maybe put them within a range that they have to be in rather than just on the mark. I don't know if they're going to be open to that. But, man, that would be
tough. It's tough.
It would be probably a smarter move, I would
guess.
Because
of all the other sports that can take place. Okay, this is one of the few that could take place, but you have all the things preparing for the fight that make it more difficult than the other sports. The other sports don't have a weight limit. The other sports don't cut weight for every game or every contest. The other sports don't have weigh-in. You know, all these things that are important part of these cards, how are they going to make exceptions for it? Because some of these guys are cutting 10, 15 pounds a couple of days before the fight. If you don't have a sauna or you don't have,
there's going to be an island sauna. Trust me. You don't have a private island without a sauna, Leroy Horde.
All right. What do you do about the immune system?
I mean, you got that beautiful island air.
That sounds like what Dana's telling them. Don't worry about it, bud. We got this fresh, beautiful air.
Hey, we got you. Don't. All right, man. We'll be back with more. This guy, Josh Rosen. Does anybody give a rat's ass about this guy anymore? We'll get to that next.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.